scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all. Aguilla's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, happy Friday. How we doing? Let's get this hour of Flames Talk underway. It's Friday the 13th. I just realized that right now.
Is that why you have so much edge today?
Maybe. Friday, December 13th. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, and welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security with smart locks and safes. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. What's going on, buddy? How we doing?
I'm hanging in there. I'm ready for a wild ride over the next hour here because firing on all cylinders.
I'm just mad at Shan again. Shan and Cam are producers, and Shan just gets me fired up. His lack of love and affection for me, it's a hard road to traverse sometimes, but we persevere. There's a lot to react to from Thursday night against Tampa Bay. Look, we get these games every once in a while, ones that just turn into an absolute bloodbath, and I think that's kind of what we saw in the third period and parts of the second period against Tampa Bay, and that's kind of what Thursday was. You when you start hearing comments like this, when you start hearing things as strong as this after a game, you know it was a rough night for the home side.
We can't give their top guys time and space like that. They're playing us like we're a bantam hockey team out there, and I think it's a little embarrassing, and I think we got to take that to heart. And you kind of let one up and then let a couple up, and then it kind of just starts to snowball, and they take advantage of that, and they just ride the train of momentum. So it's one of those things you got to try and stop in the tracks. Obviously, it's hard with the amount of talent, but definitely just not our game right from the start.
That was Connor Zeri, by the way, post-game on our Flames Talk post-game Thursday night following an 8-3 loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning. When you hear stuff like that, first of all, great stuff. I always appreciate when a guy comes on and is candid and speaks very openly after a really tough loss like that. And Connor Zeri was the guy who was pegged to do that on Thursday night. It's a great interview. I really encourage you to go check out the Flames Talk postgame show from Thursday night. But when you hear stuff like that, you know it was not a good night. When you're hearing bantam hockey drops and, you know, when you hear things like look yourself in the mirror, which I know he didn't say, or the word embarrassing, or whatever the case may be, you know it was a rough night. I remember, I think it was an 8-1 loss in San Jose. I want to say in about 2009, I remember that, or maybe it was spring 2010. I remember the 9-0-7 night for Chris Butler in Boston. The 9-1 loss, the James Neal special. I remember the 9-1 loss at home to Pittsburgh in Bill Peters' first year. I call it the James Neal special because he broke the goose egg with like 4 minutes to go.
Fan on it, or like sure he got did. Stick in the way and it just fluttered in, and it's like, well,
vintage James Neal as a member of the Flames. So, I mean, I even remember the last time another player, like an opposing player, got 6 points at the Dome. I will never forget Jamie Benn's one goal and 6 points in November of 2013.
Sagan had 4 goals that night too, if I'm not mistaken.
Five goals. I'm pretty sure he had five
I'll
goals.
I'll defer to your memory on that. But
he might have had 4 goals and 5 points, but regardless, anytime Peter Laborteus talks about that, he's like, Tyler Seguin had 5 points, and he was like
a footnote.
He was like the second best player in the game by a country mile, which was very, very true. 4 goals and 5 points for Seguin that night. And Ben with a goal and 6 points was by far the best
just
player on the
dominant
night.
Anyways.
These things happen, right? And I've gotten less worried about them over time. I've mellowed as time has gone along. Like I used to be, I remember you'd gear yourself up for a night like this. You'd gear yourself up for a really lopsided loss on the phones on the call-in show, and you'd be ready to like spit fire and hot takes and this guy's garbage and how could this guy be that bad? Now I'm just like, they happen. They're not necessarily indicators of anything other than a bad night. They're not necessarily indicative of larger problems other than a team getting rolled up one night. And that's kind of, I mean, they got away from their game. They got rolled up by a really talented group. And now we'll see if they're better against Florida. And they might still lose. Even if they're better against Florida, they might still lose on Saturday night, but at least have a good response, which we'll likely see. Most teams do respond well after games like that. But no, that was an ugly night at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Nobody's going to be parsing words on that.
No, they got punched right in the nose by the Tampa Bay Lightning. You want to talk about Sagan being a footnote in that game against Dallas? What is that, almost a decade ago now? Vasilevsky had his 500th NHL game.
It's 11 years ago.
Why would you specify? You're making me feel old, Patrick.
Because I'm
the oldest guy in the room. Ooh, Semantic Steinberg. That sounds way better. We're gonna start calling you that. But yeah, you're right. I'm not so much looking for a win against the Florida Panthers as much as I'm looking for a response to what happened Thursday night against the Lightning, because that got way out of hand, way too far, way too quickly for a game that was only a one-goal spread going into the third period. And it literally got to the point, and I'm not trying to spin this to poor Vickers here, but it was like, hey, Tampa, can you quit scoring goals? I haven't caught up to the last one yet in my running copy. I need to get this thing filed at the buzzer.
Nobody knows what a running copy is.
I'm sure they do. They'll figure it out. Anyway, it just got to be such a snowball rolling down a hill that the Calgary Flames couldn't stop. And it wasn't just goals going in. It wasn't just, Tampa Bay taking advantage of a goaltender, because I'm not hanging that so much on Dan Vladar whatsoever. You go back and you look at all those goals in the third period. Massive breakdowns on every single one of them that led to either breakaways, partial breakaways, or at best, odd man. Like, it was a structural collapse of the Calgary Flames in that third period, which is why going into the game against Florida on Saturday, not so much I'm not sitting here going, oh, they need to come away with 2 points. They need to come away with a response from what happened.
Yeah, exactly. They just want to see it be better against Florida and see where things go from there. Although I do think, one thing you brought up when we were getting ready for the show, I do think this is a valid topic to bring up, because, we could come on here 24 hours later and be like all hot takey and the Flames need to fire everybody. You're a disgrace. Craig Conroy, you have built the biggest disgrace in the history of hockey, and Ryan Huska couldn't run a bench of his life.
That is a hot take machine.
We could do all those things, but it would be fabricated.
It would be disingenuous.
I wouldn't believe them. And yes, it would be disingenuous. And again, these things happen. As Robin Coldale writes in on the text line, by the way, text line open. Say hi to us at 960-960 if you want to chat. The Wild lost 7-1. The Habs lost 9-2. So stuff happens. Like, does that mean Minnesota, who got rolled up 7-1 by the Oilers on home ice the same night the Flames got punched in the mouth 8-3? Does that mean that the Wild are a disgrace and everything that has happened prior to that 7-1 loss, that means that's meaningless, but this one game is what they really are. Like, that's why I say I've done a lot of these games before. I've reacted to a lot of these games before, and maybe I've just mellowed in my old age, but I don't put as much stock into them in terms of the bigger picture as I used to. Yes, they were junk in the third period. They were really not very good for about 50 minutes of that hockey game. They had the lead, and Tampa slowly took that game over. They really didn't deserve to be back within a goal when it was 4-3, because Tampa, got a little unlucky, made a bad mistake, and next thing you know, it's 4-3. But, I mean, Tampa was clearly the better team on that night. They clearly deserved to win that hockey game. And on top of that, the Flames didn't manage it very well. But the trend that you pointed out that I think is important is that, okay, where maybe I think there's a little bit more of a bigger picture discussion to have is that the Flames just lost 8-3 on Thursday night. And that comes 2 games after they lost 6-2, where they similarly unraveled in the third period on the road against Dallas. And that came a couple games after they completely unraveled against Pittsburgh and lost 6-2 there. And they lost 5-2 in Columbus on the road. Now it's not even a home road thing. They just got punched in the mouth on home ice. They've lost 7 of their last 9. And in 4 of those games, they've allowed 5 or more goals in a loss. So that's where I think what you brought up, Are we seeing a team that's too often now getting away from their identity? That, I think, is a fair question to ask, and that is a fair topic to take out of Thursday night. Maybe Thursday night and throw in a bunch of hot takes about what they are out of one game is a little hyperbole. But when you take a look at now a 9-game stretch where they're 2-5-2 and they've been lit up a few times, that maybe becomes a little more worrying.
Yeah, because we all know the formula for the Flames and how they need to play to have success. It needs to be tight checking. It's staying above the opposition. It's limiting opportunities for the opposition. It's capitalizing on the ones you do. But generally speaking, this is going to be a 3-2 type of team where the difference is either going to be special teams or one breakdown. So don't be on the bad side of those breakdowns. The fact is we haven't seen near enough over the course of that stretch that you just mentioned where the Flames have struggled, regardless of whether it's on the road or at home. We haven't necessarily seen them play near as much to that identity where everything is just locked up real tight defensively. And yeah, it's going to be a struggle to get to that third goal. And we know how rare it is for them to get to the fourth goal. It's only happened, what, once in the last 27 games now?
Yep.
They know how they need to play. We know how they need to play. You listening know how the Calgary Flames need to play in order to have success consistently, game in, game out. And for me, they've gotten away from that formula quite a bit. And it's not a goaltending thing. It's not like they're still executing the game plan, the systems,
and
the structure,
and
the goalies are letting them down. I would argue the contrary. It's more so that they're letting the goalies down. The last line of defense can only hold for so long, and now they haven't.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think goaltending has been as good. There's no doubt about it that that's taken a step back, but team play in front of the two goaltenders has taken a step back as well. I agree fully on that front. And I wonder a little bit if the taxing nature of playing the way they need to play is maybe starting to catch up a little bit. And so maybe we're seeing a few more games where it's harder to stick with it for a full 60 because
it's a hard brand of hockey.
You take a look at, for instance, the Dallas game. They were in a good spot after 40 and one bad thing happens and it unravels. They played a good game against Dallas for 40. I did not think they played a very good game through 40 against Tampa Bay, but they were still within a goal and they still had a opportunity to go into the third and say, win a period, win a game or win a period and at least get a point. And instead, just an incredibly awful first shift. And Brandon Hagel, unlike after four separate, like, what are you doing mistakes? Brandon Hagel scored and it's 5-3 and the Dome's completely out of it. And Tampa smells blood. And again, they put the Flames in the dirt and it's like, okay, the game's over and whatever. 6-3, 7-3, 8-3. It didn't matter at that point. Yeah, we've seen nights like that. The Pittsburgh game unraveled on them real quick, didn't it? Like there's just, so I wonder if, I do wonder if certain things that we've talked about are maybe, I don't want to say catching up, but we're seeing a little bit more frequently like, hey, this is a tough brand of hockey to play. It's a tough brand of hockey to play night in, night out. It's a tough brand of hockey to play for a full 60, so on and so forth. These aren't excuses because that is the way the Flames are going to have the most success, but maybe that is part of what we've seen here over this last 9-game stretch.
Yeah, there's certainly been.
Because we've also, during the 9-game stretch, have seen them play some pretty good games, right?
Yeah, but there are cracks in the foundation, and it is a tough system. The number one thing is you have to always be outworking your opponent. And that is tough to do consistently night in, night out. Yes, you control your own work ethic, but you don't control the work ethic on the other side. So that is paramount. And then there's the mental sort of taxation of knowing, okay, we're going to get to three. That means we've got to allow three or fewer goals in order to give ourselves a chance to win. And always playing in those tight sorts of games can be mentally taxing as well. And then, of course, the fact that the Calgary Flames, whether it's at home or on the road, home has been a lot kinder than on the road, but the Calgary Flames aren't playing with a lead near enough, and that is a taxing brand of hockey to play as well. So I wonder if just the sheer physical and mental taxation, if you will, is starting to expose the cracks in the foundation a little bit, or this is just happens to be an apparition of a stretch where things aren't going and it's easily correctable and it's just resetting after getting, as you mentioned, the doors blown off you by a Tampa Bay Lightning team that I think we both agree is still a really, really strong team, upper echelon in the NHL. the fact of the matter remains is you can point to that game. You can go back to Dallas. You can go back to Pittsburgh. You can go back to Columbus. And you start to see some common themes and, okay, what went wrong for the Flames in these outings, and identify them, run them through video sessions, and I'm sure they've already have prior to even that Tampa Bay game, but you reiterate some things, and then you see how you respond against Florida on Saturday.
On the text line at 960-960, this says, you are mellow, Pat, because you don't pay to witness that crap. Of course, I don't either. I don't think that's the reason why I've mellowed. I think I've just mellowed because I've done like 1,000 call-in shows. That's probably why I've mellowed.
Do you have the official number?
No, but like
82 times.
I'll do a quick sweetie.
He's taking off his shoes and socks so he can count.
Okay, so 82 times. This would be year 15, I think. So 82 times 15 is just over 1,200. But there was a 48 game season in there. There was a 56 game season in there, so that probably knocks it down to like 1150, and then there is some, so probably say another, I don't know, 40 that I.
But you've got your silver stick.
I've definitely, yeah, I think we're definitely in the silver stick category for
sure. Congratulations!
Yeah. Thank you. You know,
I'm going to kill you with kindness today.
Art Factora never did bleep for me when I hit 1,000. You know what? This guy needs to really reevaluate his leadership. I think. Where's my silver stick or silver microphone? I'm kidding. I don't care if what Art thinks. I just don't want anybody listening to think that I actually have
Pat's
that
just
much,
in this for have the, that for the trophies, the himself. Accolades. He plays for the name bar on the back, not the logo on the front. It's
you
terrible.
You know it. You know it. Always have.
Yeah.
This reads, let's remember, boys, they're in a rebuild, so we have no expectations. Everything so far has been icing. They're still baking the cake. That comes from Drew. This from Matt and Cochran. Watching the so-called lazy Kucherov lap the entire Flames team in points was pretty wild. Too bad the Flames never had a chance to draft a guy like that. You know, that is low-hanging fruit. That is a low-hanging fruit. You know who else had a chance to draft Nikita Kucherov? 30 other teams as well as Calgary. And yes, the Flames had Kucherov in a box. And yes, the Flames were going to take Kucherov with their next pick. If it got that far, but Tampa Bay also had him scouted. Look, I said this on the post game on Thursday night. You know, Tampa, Vasilevsky's a late first rounder. Braden Point's a second rounder. Nikita Kucherov's a second rounder. You know, you don't, and they, also Steven Stamkos is a first overall.
Hedman.
Vic Hedman was a top five pick. But you don't get lucky if you get Kucherov, Point, and Vasilevsky all outside of the top 20, right? But, and so what I basically said is, or equated it to, is, hey, Tampa's got some pretty good scouts, and they've got some guys, and they've also got the philosophy that says, we're going to bank on the high end, right? But, again, if Tampa knew that Kucherov was going to be what he was, they thought there was a chance he could be a good player. They thought there was a chance that his high end could translate to the NHL, so they took a flyer on him higher than a lot of other teams did, so they had him scouted well enough. Well, they didn't have him properly scouted. Nobody did, because he would have been a first overall pick in that year's draft had he. We know what he's going to turn into. Same thing with Braden Point, where 31 other teams passed on him, so on and so forth. But when you do it enough, like Tampa Bay has under first Steve Yzerman and then Julien Brisebois, you know that they've got a philosophy, and you know that they've got scouts that do a good job of highlighting certain things that allows them to hit on later round picks and have them turn into elite players a little bit more. So there's still some luck involved. There's definitely luck involved, but I feel like there's less luck involved than maybe some would be led to believe.
My favorite thing in the scouting community, I shouldn't say the scouting community because it's not in the scouting community, from the fan perspective, is hindsight drafting, where 5 or 7 years down the road, you go, look who they picked and look who they could have had. Well, you don't get the benefit of a crystal ball when you're sitting at the draft table, so on and so forth. And there's so many other things that go into how a player develops over the course of the age of 18 to 24 or 25 that is outside of just the draft position in which they are taken that just doesn't get taken into consideration near enough. But yeah, to your point, if Tampa Bay was so certain about Nikita Kucherov, why didn't they take him at 27 when they drafted Nemestikov instead and flipped it around? I mean, again, that's hindsight scouting.
Matt and Cochran then responds, low-hanging fruit is still delicious. Fair. Good play. Well played, Matt.
Tip of the cap.
Jordan and Mahogany. After that loss, some Flames fans were acting like Toronto media. Pat, your fake rant reminded me of the same thing. Awesome job. This says, it feels like they haven't won a battle at a blue line in weeks. Pucks don't get out and pucks don't get deep. Pospisil can't seem to pick up a breakout pass, and the neutral zone passes are terrible. It causes so many issues, and it's just lazy or fatigue. This says, as soon as I saw the 5-3 score and realized Calgary needed three goals to win, I knew the game was over. Then before I realized that Tampa had scored three goals. Brent says, Flames lack elite talent, so this will be the norm. Well, no, Brent, I don't think 8-3 losses will be the norm.
You better hope not.
Perhaps having a trouble getting to 4 or 5 goals on a nightly basis, that may be difficult. But getting rolled up like that is not going to be the norm. It hasn't been the norm. Nights like this have really happened once. You know, if you want to count on the Vegas and Utah losses on the road, maybe the Dallas loss. Or even if you throw in Pittsburgh. That's a 5 out of 30 games where maybe they have been gotten away from it. This is not what they're going to be, and this is not what they have been. But Thursday night, they got away from it against a really talented team, and they let Nikita Kucherov turn into the greatest player on the planet when he already is borderline the greatest player on the planet. And, they had no answer for him. They had no answer for Kucherov. They had next to no answer for about 7 other members of the Lightning as well. And there you have it. It's an 8-3 final.
And for me, the vibe against Tampa Bay, I understand that they lost 5-0 to Vegas and 5-1 to Utah. But the vibe just felt, and how everything collapsed, felt different against the Lightning. I don't know if it's because it's the 8th spot, it's the snowman, but it felt just a little bit, and maybe because it was a home game and I was in attendance for it as opposed to the 2 road games against Vegas and Utah. But this one just felt a little bit different. It felt like more of an implosion.
Yeah. Okay, rapid fire on a few other things, Flames, before we hit the roundtable this hour. New lines, new pairings at practice on Friday morning. John Abbott and I were sitting side by side, the television voice of the Flames, and we were kind of going back and forth. Okay, so they got that. Who's on the right on that line? Okay, so he's on the right. And then who? Okay, oh, new D pairings as well. Okay, so credit to Abs. We're friggin' higher. But credit to Abs as he helped a lot in putting these together. One line stays together. Kadri with Huberdeau and Pospisil. They're rolling. I think you should. Backlund back with Coleman on the left, Coronado on the right. So that line we saw earlier back together. This, a new look line. First time for Zeri between Sharangovich and Pelche. Pelche on the right, Sharangovich on the left. And then Rooney with Lomberg and Dewar. We saw that on Thursday night as well. Kuzmenko was odd man out, probably as he should be. On defense, Ball remains with Anderson, and Bean remained with Pahal. Other two pairings different. Weegar for the first time on the right with Joel Hanley on the left, and then Barry with Miramanov was your clear fourth pairing. So trending towards Kuzmenko, Barry, Miramanov, odd man out for Saturday's game against Florida. We'll see if we can confirm that at Saturday's morning skate. Any reaction to some of those changes?
I like seeing Coleman back with Backlund, and I don't mind Coronado being the third on that one. I do like Sharangovich being paired with Zeri, because Kuzmenko with Zeri wasn't something that was going to be working, and I felt Connor Zeri wasn't necessarily being given the resources he needed to be the explosive player that he can be and has shown this season. And I don't mind Pelche on that line because he can play with a lot of pace. And I'm really curious to see if Weegar on the right side comes to fruition as well with Hanley. Those are the three kind of things that jumped out at me. You?
I mean, Kuzmenko back is a healthy scratch for sure. But with Weegar going to the right with Hanley, that was actually the one. And we noticed it a little bit late. We're like, oh, all because we're trying to get the forward lines. And like, okay, is Kuzmenko odd man? Yep. And then they're like, oh, D pairings are different. And in fact, they rolled them Ball Anderson, which is usually the second pairing up. Usually it's been Weegar Miramanov was the first pair up, then Ball Anderson is the second pair, which is usually an indication as to how the Flames are slotting them on their internal depth chart. So it went Ball Anderson first, then Bean Pahal, then Hanley Weegar, and then Barry Miramanov. So Weegar has been struggling a little bit.
And he was the first to admit it after the game against Tampa.
Took
he owned
ton
it. He wore
on
it.
His shoulders. I mean, that shift to start the third period from both him and Miramanov cannot happen when you're in a one goal game. Like I was blown away that 53 or 43 seconds
put
Yakety
Sacks to it.
It was like none of it was forced. It was like a bunch of serves into the net. You're like, what is happening here? Anyway, we don't have to dwell on that. But the idea of moving Uyghur to his strong side while he's struggling a little bit, I still think he's playing through something. And he would tell me if he was sitting right there, he would say, no excuses. And that's part of why Uyghur's such an important guy on this team on and off the ice. But he's struggling a little bit. He's fighting it. I do think he's playing through like a foot injury or something like that. But moving him to the strong side, even if it's only for one game, I think that's a really interesting thing to do. He has played like next to no time on the right side, but I know Daryl Sutter believed this and some other internal conversations I've had. Like, I still think the belief is Uyghur's even stronger on the right side, but because they're so limited on the left and he can still play at a high level on his offside, it's still a better option team-wise to put him there. So I'm curious to see how that plays itself out and if that's something that maybe we see for more than just one game.
Yeah, that'll be something to keep on the radar for morning skate on Saturday for sure.
You all right over there?
Yeah, just wondering. Just wondering what else we got in this rapid fire.
Devin Cooley up with the team. Cooley up, Vladar day-to-day, lower body injury, precaution only, or mostly. I don't think there's anything really overly serious here at all, but when you've got a goalie coming off of hip surgery and maybe feeling like something wasn't quite right, be cautious. And when you've got a safety net like Devin Cooley, the best goalie in the American League, you might as well use him. You can pretty much take to the bank. I would think that Dustin Wolf's going to start against Florida on Saturday. I think he was going to start that game against them anyway after the way things went against Tampa. But when you've got a safety net like Devin Cooley and when you've got three goalies that you're confident can play NHL games right now, much like they did last year, well, if you've got a guy who isn't feeling 100%, don't push it and take him out of the rotation for a little bit. Maybe it's a game. Maybe it's three games. It's not major. It's precaution mostly, and maybe an opportunity to see Devin Cooley in a Flames uniform for the first time. We'll see.
And this is what emergency recalls are for, particularly when you're with goaltenders. Allows you to bump up over the max roster. You bring in Cooley. You get to see him in a Flames practice. You potentially get to see him in a game and do a little evaluation and a little carrot for Cooley, too, who's had just a phenomenal start to his tenure with the Wranglers. One of, if not the best goalies in the AHL this season.
Yeah. Anything else? I think that's good.
Nothing a lot really of stuff. Else.
Nothing really else on the text line that we need to read. This says, I think Uyghur was really affected by the Team Canada snub. You could see it a bit before the team was announced. Mick says Uyghur is stronger on the right side. And I am curious to see it. I still, like, if they could find Uyghur a Kevin Ball. And what I mean by that is to find Uyghur the right fit. Like, Kevin Ball, even though they had a rough road trip, Ball has been a great fit with Anderson, and that's turned into their best pairing, right? If they could find a left side shot for Uyghur, I don't know, maybe at some point it's Jake Bean. I don't know. Bean and Pahal seem to have worked pretty well together. But if they could find that guy at some point down the road to be a great foil for McKenzie on the right side, that would, I think, really help push the team forward. It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, Friday edition now of the Daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Wilsey, we were down at practice on Friday morning following the 8-3 loss at Tampa, and I know that both you and I have the same thing on our minds going into practice. Okay, what are things going to look like? What are these forward lines and even these defense pairings going to look like? And we did see some changes. One of the things you brought up in your final thoughts on your portion of the Flames Talk post-game show Thursday night was, you know, maybe it's time for Andre Kuzmenko to take a seat again and spend some more time on the sidelines. Well, indeed, Andre Kuzmenko is going to, what we don't know for sure, but looks like based on practice Friday morning, will be a healthy scratch against the Florida Panthers. He was very clearly the odd man out at practice on Friday morning. He sat for two games last week, then has come back in for a few since then. I don't think that we need to discuss whether or not it's gotten markedly better or not, because generally I think the answer would be no. Guys, knowing that, like, do we see a fix here on the Kuzmenko front? Do we see something that could either fix this on the ice or fix this big picture when it comes to Kuzmenko and the Flames?
Well, and I really hated to single him out because, you know, he's a quirky guy, but he's a fun guy, and I want to see him succeed. I know that he can have success in this league. He scored, you know, almost 40 in his first season and got to past 20 in his second season, but it has been just an epic struggle for him in his third season in the NHL. And I think if he scored a goal, it might get him going, but it feels like it's been forever since he scored a goal. So it's hard to know what a goal would or wouldn't do for the confidence of Andre Kuzmenko. I think it's pretty clear that he's lacking confidence right now. I've always been a big believer that confident players shoot the puck and unconfident players don't. And when I've asked Flames coaches about Andre Kuzmenko and why he's not shooting the puck, confidence comes up. But the other thing that they made mention of is, you know, he's looking for the perfect play, whether it be the perfect pass or the perfect shot. Doesn't want to waste shots. If a grade A chance isn't there, he'll try to make one. And sometimes you just have to take what your opponent gives you. And I don't think he's done a very good job doing that and changing his mindset when it comes to that. What's the solution? I mean, simply play better. He has to play better. He has to find a way to impact games positively. Right now, I would say he's not doing that. And on too many nights, I would say that he's probably had a negative impact as far as the Flames are concerned, because plays are dying on his stick. He's turning the puck over, which on occasion has led to odd man rushes and scoring chances and goals for Flames opponents. He's just got to simplify his game, in my opinion. He's got to start shooting the puck. That is first and foremost for me. His shot is his best weapon. And guys, if I'm not mistaken, he hasn't had a shot on goal in four games. Didn't have a shot attempt in the Flames 8-3 loss to the Lightning on Thursday night, and hasn't had more than two shots on a goal in a single game this season. For a guy who's paid to score goals, that's not going to cut it.
Yeah, I don't know what to add to that. I just don't see the fix coming in Calgary for Kuzmenko. And then I caution, if he's not a fix on a team that's devoid of top-end talent, where is he going to be a fit for? What other organization would look at him through the 28 games that he's played for the Flames, and he's got one goal, 9 points, or nine assists, 10 points, and go, you know what? We think we can make something work with him. We think we can coach out of him what might be ailing him or what might be limiting him. This isn't a situation, from my perspective anyway, where he hasn't been given enough opportunity, because he certainly has, and I think we'll all agree he hasn't made the most of it. I don't think this is a situation where he's unclear of what the coaching staff is asking him to do. I don't think he's played 28 games not knowing what his role is, what his job is, or what the coaching staff wants him to accomplish. I'm certain when he's been a healthy scratch, the team has and the coaching staff has relayed, hey, this is why we're taking you out of the lineup. When you do get back in, here's what we want to see. Well, you ran through it. He hasn't had a shot on goal in four straight games as one of the team's best pure shooters or pure snipers. So I just look at the situation and go, is it fixable with the Calgary Flames? I'm not certain it is. But at the same time, I look at the situation going, okay, if it's not fixable with the Flames, where would there be a fit elsewhere? And I'm not sure I see it either.
Well, I've thought a lot about this. And for the time being, if you're the coaching staff, you just have to keep on seeing what you can. Like, you got to keep on icing your best lineup on any given night. And I think sometimes maybe Kuzmenko, depending on the matchup, might be a part of that. I don't think it is against the defending Stanley Cup champions. And I think that's a big reason why he'll come out. And so I think for the time being, if you're Ryan Huska and the coaching staff, you keep drilling the message in, shoot the puck more, be more simple, be more direct, and help us. Because if you do those things, you will. Your shot's too good. You're too skilled. If you do these things, you will help us. Right now, you're not helping us, or you're not helping us anywhere near enough. But I guess I am starting to become skeptical that there is, like, that fix is actually going to be found. And if it is, I'll be the first one to say, that's awesome. I didn't see it coming, but I'm happy that they have found the fix. But I'll be honest with you guys, I don't see it coming. I really have moved fairly decisively into the change of scenery camp when it comes to how there might be a fix here. And I know there's not a ton of trade value right now, but, you know, Vic's asked the question, where might he succeed? Well, I think there are teams that play a little bit more of an up-tempo, offensively bent brand of hockey where he would be a little bit more of a fit, like the team that scored 8 at the Saddle Dome on Thursday night, or I'm just throwing other teams out there, but there are teams like the Vegas Golden Knights, and there are teams like the Edmonton Oilers, and teams that are just the way they play, the way the Colorado Avalanche, like, they are always nose pointed north, and it is go, go, go offensively, and lots of rush chances, all that type of stuff. Yeah, I think Kuzmenko could be a whole lot more of a fit in a brand of hockey like that. With $5.5 million as his salary, with one goal in however many games, with the struggles he's having right now, I don't think you're going to get a lot of teams offering much of anything for you. I know last week Frank Saravalli brought up Pittsburgh as an example. Like, could a Penguins team, look what they've done with Tomasino, could the Penguins be a team that could give him some opportunity, a slightly different way of playing, and see if he could be a little bit more of a successful player there? So I really am wondering if that is ultimately the fix, even if you're not going to get a significant return for him, because I think it kind of alleviates a problem for the Flames. I do think the longer this goes on, this turns into a distraction, not because Kuzmenko's a bad guy, just because when you've got a $5.5 million player being a healthy scratch, that is inherently a distraction. Doesn't matter how good the attitude is, it just, that's a distraction. And so it alleviates the Flames a distraction, opens up a roster spot for a younger player, and gives a guy who right now looks like he'll be fighting for his NHL life after this season, gives him an opportunity elsewhere to fight for a contract and maybe get his game back on track. That's why I've moved all the way over to that side. I don't know if the Flames are there, Willsy, and if they are or aren't, well, he's still here now. And so for the time being, I do think the Flames have still got to do, Ryan Huska and this coaching staff still have to do everything in their power to see if they can get more out of him right now while he's playing. And I think sometimes a healthy scratch might be a part of it. And we'll see how it continues to evolve for the time being here, I guess.
Yeah, and they need to get back to checking the way they have for most of the season. And I'm not sure that he's part of that solution. I think if the team as a whole is playing really well defensively, again, as they have for most of the season, then you can have one or two guys who maybe don't play that brand of hockey and get away with it. But the team right now hasn't done as good a job staying on top of the puck or on the right side of the puck, however you want to describe it. And they've been leaky defensively, way more so than they were early in the season. The goaltending's come back down to earth a little bit. Not that I'm faulting Dan Vladar or Dustin Wolf for the Flames' recent struggles, but a guy like Andre Kuzmenko has to produce offensively to be effective, because he's, and this is just the truth in my opinion, he's not great defensively and probably never will be. As far as what the solution is, again, I think the simplest solution is for him to start playing better. If he gets a goal, who knows where that goes. I think about how much better he was with the Flames last season than he was with the Canucks, which is why Vancouver traded him to Calgary. Could a change of scenery benefit him again? Sure. Maybe if there was a team that was a better fit for him style-wise, yeah, I could see him having success with another team. But I just don't know that he has any trade value right now because of that $5.5 million cap hit. Now, Craig Conroy has the Flames in a great position salary cap-wise. They could potentially get more for him or something for him if they were to eat 50% of his salary, but you don't want to do that any more than you have to. And if it's not worth your while, then you probably don't do that. that. So I hope he gets an opportunity to remind us of how good he is, how skilled he is. We had a conversation last season. I think we had another conversation this season talking about the most dynamic offensive players on this team. And if Andre Kuzmenko is not at the top of that list, he's certainly near the top of that list when he's right. He hasn't been right for most of the season. He's got to find a way to start positively impacting hockey games again. And for me, that's by scoring goals or at least producing points and not hurting your team more than helping your team. It's been tough to watch because I do think he's a quirky guy, but a good guy, and I want him to have success.
Yeah.
The bottom line is he's had a really long leash and just hasn't taken advantage of that.
I'm not going to profess to be a Vancouver Canucks expert, and this isn't Canucks talk, but there seems to be a lot of parallels
by
between
the way, Canucks talk, great show. Same with Canucks Central, all part of the Sportsnet family of podcasts.
Thank you. You can sort of see some parallels between the two where through this date, Friday, December 13th, compared to last year, Kuzmenko last year with the Canucks had 5 goals, 16 points in 26 games and really fell out of favor with Rick Tocchet. Kuzmenko, to this point, 1 goal, 9 assists, 10 points in 28 games. So you start to see maybe a pattern forming here. Now, if I'm an acquiring team of Andre Kuzmenko, that would concern me greatly. But at the same time, you look and he still had 25 points in 29 games after the trade to the Flames. So I wonder, is this going to be a constant cycle for Kuzmenko where every, 100 games or so he needs to filter through to a new organization? I'm not sure. You hope there's something for him on the other side, but I can't imagine that there's a whole bunch of teams lining up to pay a significant asset for him right now.
It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg as we continue along on this Friday Roundtable. Gents, I'll take you back to July of 2022 when Matthew Tkachuk was traded to the Florida Panthers. We don't need to get into the Flames side of the trade and what they gave up. I think we all know we've talked enough about that over the last 2.5 years. But on the Panthers side of things, I think we all knew when Matthew Tkachuk was dealt to Florida that the Panthers were kind of getting the crown jewel of the trade. With no disrespect to Uyghur or Jonathan or the first-round pick, the 23-year-old at the time who had just come off a 105-point season, the unicorn that is Matthew Tkachuk, all that type of stuff. I think we knew that the Panthers were kind of getting the best piece of that trade based on all the things that we evaluate players on. But did we ever see Matthew getting there being such a rousing success afterwards to this extent, like a Stanley Cup final and then a Stanley Cup? And he's been, he had his career season in his first year. He's having a hell of a year again this year, even though he's missed some time. He just won a Stanley Cup. I wonder, do we ever see it being this much of a rousing success on the other side?
Not necessarily. I mean, generally speaking, when you make a trade, the team that gets the best player more often than not wins that trade in hindsight. And until we know what the Flames do with that first-round pick, I think it's going to be difficult to completely evaluate the trade. Mackenzie Weegar's been one of their top two defensemen. Jonathan Huberdeau, I think you could argue, has been, if not their best forward, one of their best forwards this season. So the trade, from a Flames perspective, doesn't look horrible. And again, Brad Treleving was put in a tough spot. He had to make a deal, and he took the one that he thought was best, and I don't fault him for that. As far as the Panthers, obviously Matthew Tkachuk has been a huge part of their success. They felt like they needed to change the culture there, and he is certainly the type of player and the type of person who can help you change your culture. He'll never be the fastest player in the league, but he will always be one of the smartest players in the league. And I think that is due in large part to where he comes from, and that's from a hockey family. Obviously, his dad, Keith, had an incredible career in the NHL as well. His little brother, Brady, is an outstanding player in this league. The Tkachuks are a special family. There's no doubt about that. But for me, it's about more than just Matthew. He's not the only reason they've had as much success as they have, winning a President's Trophy and winning a Stanley Cup. They have changed the culture there. They've changed how they've played. I think about Jonathan Huberdeau's final season with the Panthers when he finished tied with Johnny Gaudreau for second in the Art Ross Trophy race with 115 points. Well, one of the reasons why Jonathan Huberdeau isn't putting up those types of numbers is because the Flames play a lot different style than those old Panthers teams did. Those teams, and Ryan Huska talked about it yesterday with us, they tried to win 7-6. That's how they wanted to play. and then they learn that they can't have success in the Stanley Cup playoffs playing that brand of hockey. So obviously Tkachuk has been a huge part of their success, but you know, they picked up Reinhart, a former second overall pick, and he's turned into one of the best goal scorers in the NHL. And they've added Bennett, who I think has turned into a player that all Flames fans hoped that he would be for their franchise. So they've done a lot of really good things. I give Bill Zito a lot of credit for the moves that he's made there. But obviously the single biggest move he made was acquiring Matthew Tkachuk. And players like that generally don't become available at that stage of their career. So the Flames were in a unique position having to trade him, and the Panthers were in a unique position being able to acquire him, and he's been excellent for them. So, yeah, he's been a game changer. There's no doubt about it.
I hope this doesn't sound disrespectful to Matthew Tkachuk, but when the trade was made, he was coming off that 42-goal, 104-point season where he was plus 57 and part of the best line in hockey with Johnny Gaudreau and Elias Lindholm. And that move gets made. And I went, well, at least the Flames are selling at the highest point in terms of value they could on Matthew Tkachuk. And no. Because the next season, his first season with the Panthers, he had 109 points. And I didn't necessarily think that Matthew Tkachuk would be a repeat century mark player in terms of what he was able to produce offensively. And even last season when, you know, they go and they win the Stanley Cup, he had 88 points in 80 games. He's sitting at well over a point per game now for the Florida Panthers this season, too. It's just like, I thought we had seen peak Matthew Tkachuk, and then it turns out even more so he had another level, even more so he had another level in the playoffs where he was a key figure for the Panthers in two Stanley Cup runs. One, of course, they won, one they didn't. But you hear the stories about Brady having to get him out of bed to play games in the Stanley Cup final. Like, that's just insane to me. So when you ask the question, did we ever see this being such a rousing success for Florida? Well, yes, to a degree, because they got the best player in the deal, and I have no reason to doubt necessarily that Matthew Tkachuk wouldn't go down there and be a tone setter on and off the ice for him. I just, maybe after seeing him at a 104-point season, sold him short a little bit, because he is, as you mentioned off the top, one of those unicorn-type players, a rare breed of player that can beat you any number of ways, and he has shown both on and off the ice his ability to pull a team into the fight and find success, because that's all Florida's done since he's arrived.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he'd be a great fit there. I thought that he would, I thought he would just continue being the player that he is. I don't know if I saw the Panthers going to two straight Stanley Cup finals immediately after him getting there. They obviously got rolled up in the first one. I love that term all of a sudden. I've used it once or twice already this hour. But they got beat in the first final by Vegas. And then, hey, they did us all a favor in June. Let's not forget who they beat in June. Remember?
Well, he won't let you forget it either, though. I mean, he did
exactly.
Shout out Calgary fans.
Couldn't let Edmonton beat us. So, yeah, I did not see it. And honestly, to see him go from 105 to like 109 or whatever it was the next
109,
year,
yeah.
I didn't see that either. I didn't see him getting even better offensively than he was from his final year in Calgary to his first year in Florida. I know it took a dip last year, but he's kind of back on.
His dip was still 88 points in 80 games.
I know. And this year he's probably going to be in the 90 points range. I mean,
on pace for 93 and 77.
Like, the guy he's turned into a full-on, no questions asked, foundational elite hockey player. I don't think that was as much of a surprise, but for him to be the primary catalyst, and Wilsey, the way you laid it out is bang on. Like, it wasn't just that move, it wasn't just that addition, but that kind of being the primary catalyst of the culture change, and then to see it work so successfully, that's maybe been the most kind of jarring success or biggest surprise, is how quickly successful and ultimately high-end successful they've been.
Yeah, and I actually thought Matthew Tkachuk could take another step because of his age, and I didn't think that he had reached his prime as a member of the Flames, and obviously the organization would have loved to keep Matthew Tkachuk, but it didn't work out that way. But, you know, he joined a Panthers team and was surrounded by a ton of talent. You know, he played with Elias Lindholm, who was a really high-end player when they had that line with him, Johnny Gaudreau, and Matthew Tkachuk. But let's be honest, Alexander Barkov is like Elias Lindholm on steroids. not literally, but figuratively. So you've got one of the best 200-foot players in the league. No real Johnny Gaudreau type with the Panthers, but you know Sam Reinhardt, as I mentioned, one of the best goal scorers in the game. So you know, he's got a lot of great pieces around him, but obviously Matthew Tkachuk has been one of the best players on one of the best teams in the league since he got traded by the Flames to the Panthers, and you know, good to see him and Sam Bennett and last season Ryan Lomberg have success. So we'll see how the Flames fare against the defending champs on Saturday night. Feels like one of those games that if they could find a way to win it, it could be a springboard to have some success into the Christmas break and be their signature win so far this season. But we know what the Panthers getting shut out by the Canucks on Thursday night. That's not going to be easy for the Flames, so we'll see how it goes.
We will see you Saturday morning, Willsey. Great stuff as always. Thank you, man.
Okay, guys, have a good weekend.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport as we start to wrap things up this hour on the program. Thanks to Cam Hughes. Thanks to Shan Vergy, our outstanding producers. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll do it for the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security. With smart locks and safes, visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.